12:37 now on the Afternoon Magazine, and we're going to see some clouds moving in, but the snow, there is snow in our forecast, but it's going to hold off till the beginning of next week. An area of high pressure is shifting into the eastern U.S., and southerly winds behind that are continuing across the Midwest, helping to boost temperatures back to near normal conditions for today and tonight. Tomorrow, a low pressure system will pass to our north across the Great Lakes. That'll shift the winds back to the northwest. That means colder temperatures and a few snow flurries possible from the system across portions of Illinois and Indiana. But we're seeing scattered flurries for tomorrow, but a chance of snow, a little better chance of snow coming up. As we kick off next week, mostly cloudy for the rest of this afternoon, though, and a high of around 26 degrees. That's what they've called it, although we've just gotten to 27 here on Friends Plaza, so let's call it upper 20s. Southwest winds at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Temperature won't go too far lower than that tonight, 22 for the low, with that chance of scattered flurries kicking off. Southwest winds tonight at 10 to 15 miles an hour. And for tomorrow, clouds and scattered flurries. Saturday's high of around 30. West winds at 10 to 15 miles an hour. Saturday night will turn colder, down to 11 degrees for the low. Skies are still mostly cloudy. Northwest winds at 5 to 10. On Sunday, cloudy at a high of 23 degrees. The winds will be shifting to the south then. And for Sunday night through Wednesday, we're continuing to see a mostly cloudy forecast. Monday through Tuesday is when that snow may fall. Highs Monday around 30, Tuesday in the low 20s, and then temperatures will fall from there. Wednesday's high only in the mid-teens in the east central part of Illinois. Lows tomorrow, Sunday night in the mid-teens, and then slowly rising temperatures after midnight then. Monday night, lows in the low 20s and the low single digits by the time we hit Tuesday night. Looking around the area right now, temperatures are in the low to mid-20s, actually some upper 20s as you hit Mattoon in Paris, where it's 28 degrees. 26 in Springfield, 28 in Decatur. Further north, a little bit cooler in Rantoul, 23, Danville, 25, with some lingering sunshine. And 22 degrees in Bloomington, 21 in Pontiac. At Willard Airport at the top of the hour, it was 25 degrees with some sunshine. The dew point at 18, relative humidity at 74%. Wind out of the southwest at 8, creating a wind chill of 16, falling barometer at 30.26. And on Friends Plaza on the U of I campus, it's 27 degrees. It's 12:40. It's the Afternoon Magazine on Illinois Public Media. U.S. Senator Mark Kirk held a town hall meeting last night in Champaign. The Illinois Republican narrowly defeated former state treasurer Alexei Janulius in the November election and now has President Obama's old Senate seat. Illinois Public Media's Sean Power spoke with Kirk in a packed room on the Parkland College campus in Champaign about his time in the Senate, his thoughts about Illinois' income tax increase passed this week, and his feelings about the recent shootings in Arizona.
The lame duck session at the federal level, I think, made two critical decisions. First, it voted in a bipartisan way, along with President Obama, to prevent a huge tax increase from harming the U.S. economy. And I think had we not done that, America would have suffered a double-dip recession, throwing millions more Americans out of work. The second thing we did in the lame duck was we killed a $1.1 trillion, 6,600 earmark, 924-page spending bill. And so I think we came to the right conclusion. We didn't increase taxes, and we killed an enormous spending bill. And those were the right two decisions.
Illinois Governor Pat Quinn just signed legislation to temporarily increase the state's income tax rate by two-thirds. Senator, why, in your opinion, is this the wrong step to help turn the state's economy around?
It will make Illinois a high-tax state, especially as compared to Indiana. Indiana governor has hailed this as a pro-jobs measure for Indiana because so many businesses will leave our state, and I think that's unfortunate.
Senator, you served in the Naval Reserve, and you broke from your party to support the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. What other issues would you cross party lines to support?
Well, I am a fiscal conservative and a social moderate, and so my moderate views are well known in the Congress, and I am who I am and will continue to be very much a centrist on social issues in the United States Congress.
What was it about that issue that convinced you to support it?
The Joint Chiefs of Staff had done the careful work necessary Originally, people wanted to change the policy without talking to our military leaders. I think we should talk to our military leaders before changing a policy. But they had done that careful work. And the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Gary Ruffhead, in a private meeting with me, told me a key thing that I had not heard before, which is that the United States Navy and other service recruitment efforts had been whipsawed by various California federal court decisions to start recruiting, to stop recruiting, and the military was beginning to be run by federal judges. This decision returned control back to military leaders, which I think was necessary.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the recent attacks in Tucson. There's been a lot of talk about political rhetoric, and we don't know if that actually contributed to the attacks, but do you think the level of political rhetoric in this country needs to be toned down?
I think we should take the words of the president to heart, which he said we should use words that heal, not wound, and that we shouldn't take this opportunity as a chance to turn on each other from the left or right. And for me, as a state elected official, I'm going to use this opportunity to extract a silver lining from a national tragedy, which is to use a more genteel set of words.
Kirk also took a moment to reflect on his friend, Arizona Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords.
Gabby is a superstar. I know her best because, unlike all the other eulogy statements you heard, she speaks Chinese. And so we work on U.S.-China relations very much, and she always lit up a room if Chinese officials visited to welcome them in their own language. She's very popular on the Republican side. She's independent-minded. She voted against Speaker Pelosi remaining in the leadership position. And my hope is that she recovers from this because she's quite a popular member of Congress.
U.S. Senator Mark Kirk spoke with Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers last night. Kirk adds that he hopes that Jared Lee Loftner, the man suspected of shooting Giffords and 19 other people, is sentenced to death for the attack. It's 12:44. The Detroit Auto Show opens to the public tomorrow, and there's a lot of buzz surrounding electricity. You name it, it's been electrified, an electric bicycle, moped, even a battery-powered racing car. And, of course, there are now plenty of electric cars. NPR's Sonari Glinton reports on how long it'll take all of this electricity to come to you.
Here it is, the big news out of the North American International Auto Show in Detroit.
And the 2011 North American Car of the Year is the Chevrolet Volt.
The Chevy Volt, the electric car with a backup gas engine, is clearly the star of the Detroit Auto Show. But it's certainly not the only electric car or hybrid in the game.
Tesla, Nissan Leaf, Smart E, Mini E, Mercedes SLS E.
That's Jessica Caldwell. She's an analyst with Edmunds.com. It's an automotive website. She could keep listing the cars for a while, but here's the question. Are there enough electric cars in production so that if you wanted to buy one, you could get one right now?
You can't really get one. If you get one, it's going to be secondhand because there's such a high demand for those vehicles right now.
To give you an idea, December is one of the most important months for auto sales. And in December, General Motors sold 329 Chevy Volts. There are about 10 Nissan Leafs sold. Now, both those cars just started production, and neither of those companies are planning to keep the production at that level. Tony DeSale is head of marketing for the Chevy Volt.
Today, a lot of our customers are early tech adopters, typically the first on the block to have an iPhone or an iPad.
Or an electric car.
That's going to migrate through time. And so the most important thing is for consumers, mass market consumers, to understand the benefits of the Volt.
So in the coming years, what exactly is a mass market?
We've announced 10,000 units for sale during the 2011 calendar year.
And next year?
We'll sell 45,000 units or build 45,000 units for sale here in the United States.
To give you an idea of how many cars that is, Porsche sold 25,000 cars in the U.S. These are not tremendous numbers.
Look, the electrification of America's fleet is not going to occur overnight.
That is Bob Lutz. He just retired as vice chairman of General Motors. Lutz takes credit, often, for the Chevy Volt. He says electrification will be a gradual process.
And if you take yourself out to the year 2025 and you look at what percentage of the total vehicle market is going to be electric, it'll probably be 10 to 15%. But will it suddenly flip and like within 2 years you go into a showroom and half the cars are electric? The answer is no. That's going to take a long time.
Remember Jessica Caldwell, the analyst we heard at the top of the story? She says The plain old combustion engine that's been around for over 100 years keeps getting more and more fuel efficient, and small cars are getting safer and more luxurious. Caldwell says while the industry and electric cars catch up, there are plenty of options for those who want to increase the number of miles they get per gallon, even if they're not as exciting. Sonari Glinton, NPR News, Detroit.
The U.S. government wants to send 2010 tax refunds to some people's debit cards. That new program is aiming to put prepaid debit cards into the hands of lower-income Americans who don't have bank accounts. Here's Lisa Chow of member station WNYC.
Here's the problem. 9 million households in the U.S., that's one of every 13 households, don't have a bank account. They often have to wait to get their tax refund check in the mail and then pay a fee to a check casher to convert it. Or they can get an advance on the refund through a tax preparation service. Either way, it's costly. Next week, the Treasury Department will offer 600,000 unbanked Americans a debit card that can receive direct deposits.
I mean, I think the government is doing this to try to get more folks into the banking system.
Chi-Chi Wu is an attorney at the National Consumer Law Center. She says the program isn't cost-free. Some people will have to pay $4.95 a month for the debit card. But she says that's a lot cheaper than the current options. The challenge will be whether the government's letter will get through to people.
It's not just another piece of junk mail. It's, you know, actually legitimately from Treasury, and it's something that could save them money.
The government says it will be using a mix of messages in its letters to see which gets more people to sign up. For NPR News, I'm Lisa Chow in New York.
You're one of 170 million Americans who stay informed or get inspired.
One of 170 million Americans who use public media every month. That's more than half the country. Now public media needs your support.
Make sure the programming you need in your community stays in your community. Learn more about federal funding for public media at 170millionamericans.org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 14th of January, 2011. It's the birthday of Mary Robeson, born in Washington, D.C., 1949, novelist, short story writer, grew up in Ohio, five brothers, two sisters, ran away from home twice, once going to Florida to look for Jack Kerouac. She always wanted to be a writer. She wrote a short story called Sisters. The New Yorker published it in 1976.